All right, welcome back. Leading off our show, as always, is the great Luke Jones, always doing great things for our community, his community up there in Pennsylvania and globally, worldwide. And he's traveling all over the globe. He's the globe-trotting deacon, Luke Jones. Luke, welcome in.
Dennis, how are you, my friend? It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. I think that Lamar Jackson should reach out to Orlando Brown Jr.'s his agent. And get himself a contract. That's what I think. That's what I think today.
Although I would say this much, Orlando Brown did not play the market right. I mean, when you hear what Kansas City was offering, even going back to what, last year, I guess,
Yeah, that's
and what
correct.
he ends up getting with the Bengals, and look, he gets to stay at left tackle. I mean, that's something that's been very, very much a thing for him. He's been very passionate about wanting to play left tackle. And I think, and that's what was interesting about the start of this free agency was even I was watching Adam Schefter on ESPN saying what many people with the Ravens thought, that they think he's a better right tackle than left tackle. Doesn't mean he's bad at left tackle, but I think what's the bad news here for the Ravens is Cincinnati got him probably at a much more appropriate value for what his skill level is at left tackle, which he's not a great left tackle, but he's certainly,
He's
he's
serviceable.
good.
Yeah,
He's good. And certainly a big upgrade over Jonah Williams, their previous left tackle, who I assume they'll probably move him to the right side now. Maybe they'll cut Lyle Collins. I'm not sure what they'll do. But the end result is Orlando Brown Jr. back in the AFC North, and an upgrade for that Cincinnati offensive line, which you look at the Bengals, and we're talking about the Bengals because let's face it, there hasn't been a whole lot to talk about with the Ravens. We'll get to Lamar in a moment, but in terms of player movement, not a whole lot to write home about, other than a couple guys leaving at this point that were expected. But it's a case where in the AFC North, the Bengals have lost a number of players, specifically I think the big loss for them, their two safeties, Von Bell and of course Jesse Bates, who played on the tag last year. But the Bengals do get an upgrade for their offensive line, and a pretty significant one considering how low that bar had been. So Orlando Brown, not bad for him from a football standpoint. I mean, contract complaints aside, he protected Lamar Jackson and then Patrick Mahomes, and now he'll protect Joe Burrow. So that's pretty good. I mean, you can't find too many offensive tackles who've been in the league, what, 5 years, and they've protected one surefire Hall of Famer in Patrick Mahomes. Lamar
Yes.
Jackson's a former MVP, regardless of how the rest of his career plays out and whether Lamar will be in the Hall of Fame conversation. And Joe Burrow, who is right up there among the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL at this point. So, pretty good for him on that part, but it'll be interesting at the very least to see Orlando Brown back in the AFC North.
Yeah, he got himself some good guaranteed money though, at least for the first 2 years. So
He did.
he played that piece of it very well, given the disastrous combine he had and him dropping in the draft. And I believe I had read that no offensive lineman that had ran as slow as he did ever really made it in the NFL. So give him a credit for working hard and putting himself in that position.
Oh, no question. And again, I mean, it's a case of people can scoff at the Pro Bowls that he has and say, okay, well, if you look at his PFF grade and look at this metric and look at that metric, he's not an elite left tackle. And I would agree with that. But yeah, I mean, this guy has done very well for himself. And considering what you just mentioned, I was there covering that combine that was so disastrous for him, and knowing that he kind of went from being what people thought would be a first round pick to and ended up being a third round pick, of course, of the Ravens. And for him to do what he has done at this point, and again, say what you want about the contract, the average annual value certainly is not what people would have projected. And you can question his choice as far as agent. I know he switched agents along the way, and but he, I will say, and I'm glad you pointed it out, he did get a pretty good guarantee as far as the first couple years of the deal, and then see how it plays out. But again, long story short, the Bengals get an upgrade to their offensive line, and certainly that's not something Ravens fans are going to be happy about, but it'll be interesting to see him back in the division nonetheless.
Well, for sure, Ravens moves running back Justice Hill. Re-signed for a couple of years anyway. A great special teams player. Showed some pop last year before he got hurt. Thoughts on Justice Hill's contract?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me this, Dennis. I struggle with this because I actually like Justice Hill. And I think, there were even some times last year where I thought he could have been a little more involved, especially when the Ravens were kind of still waiting on J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. And, he showed some explosiveness. He's a very good special teams player. We've seen him make an impact as a gunner. But where I struggle with a deal like this is the kind of contract that when you look at it, you say, well, it's only a couple million dollars. I think this is the kind of contract in general, and this is not a slight to Justice Hill, but he is your number three running back, right? I mean, we would all agree with that. He's a special teams player. He is someone who, even putting aside the Achilles injury in 2021, he's had some other nagging injuries and times where he's missed some time. When you're up tight against a salary cap, or even when you're not, when you're just about this in a more general roster building philosophy, looking at it from that standpoint, I think the Ravens at times, and you and I've talked about this, at times I think they get into a pattern of having too many of these guys that are on 2 to 3 million per year kind of deals. And any single player in isolation, it's fine. Again, I'm not going to sit here and write a full column on, thinking that re-signing Justice Hill was this terrible move, but it does add up when you have a bunch of players that are kind of in that pay grade, no longer on a rookie deal, but certainly not guys that are moving the needle. If you have too many of them, it starts to add up. And then what happens? You're up a little bit tighter against the cap, and you don't really have that flexibility to go get that difference maker that we've talked about at different times. Wide receiver being an example, and I'm not saying that right in here in the now. I mean that in a big picture sense. So from that standpoint, I kind of look at where they are with their salary cap, knowing that they're really in this holding pattern. Some people have gone as far as saying Lamar Jackson's holding them hostage, which the imagery, I don't want to go there, but it's kept them in a position where they need to maintain as much cap flexibility as they can, not knowing if the Indianapolis Colts, for example, who to me look like maybe the only candidate at this point to really potentially make a serious run at signing him to an offer sheet. But just in a big picture sense, this Justice Hill deal, which, it's reported 2 years, 4.5 million, not a lot of guaranteed money there. You probably could move on from him at the end of the preseason. Although, I saw one report that said he's, a little over $1 million guaranteed. That's not, this isn't a flat non-guaranteed deal where you can just cut him
Sure.
and there's no consequence. So, again, I don't want to pile on. It's not about Justice Hill, but when you have players that kind of fit that category and you have too many of them, and we know the Ravens have valued special teams, we know they value depth. I get that. I fully understand that. But it does add up. And if you have too many players like that, it does cost you some other opportunities down the line. So, that's kind of my 500 word summary, whatever you want to call it, as far as that, just from a philosophical standpoint. I look at some of the restricted free agents that they did not tender. And I look at someone like Geno Stone, and maybe it
Sure.
came down to maybe the Ravens had a similar offer to Geno Stone on the table, and he said, no, I want to look around and maybe find another place where I could start. And Justice Hill said yes, because, well, he's a number three running back and a special teams player. So, from that standpoint, I certainly didn't love the deal. I'm not going to sit here and say that
Sure.
it's the worst thing ever, because, it's not as though there's a ton of real money pumped into it. But those are the kind of deals that over the years, especially now when we're talking about, regardless of what happens with Lamar, assuming he's here in 2023, he's either going to be on the tag, which is still below market, but more substantial than any other player on your roster, or he's going to be on a long-term deal, which is going to be a much different cap consequence over the next several years. That's where you look at a deal like this and say, okay, it's a couple million dollars. No, not a big deal. But these are the kind of deals that I think you got to be careful with. And I'd say this from a long-term planning standpoint, J.K. Dobbins, final year of his rookie deal. Gus Edwards, who they did renegotiate and restructure his deal, it took a little bit of a pay cut. He's in the final year of his deal. So the cap number is better. But you look at this from a long-term planning standpoint, I would still say, still be looking at the draft to be taking a running back on day three. So, from that standpoint, if you do that, then you have four running backs, and there's still a pretty decent amount of money pumped into the position, and not a whole lot of long-term security with that method. So, it's fine. That was a kind of a roundabout way to say the deal was fine, but I'm certainly not going to sit here and say that I thought it was the best use of their resources given where they are right now with their cap. But it's not a whole lot else they can really do, to be totally honest with you, until they have a better feel for what Lamar's market is going to be as far as that offer sheet, territory goes.
Yeah, I was going to go to Geno Smith next, but you addressed that for us. The being a draftnik, a fellow draftnik, of course, I'm looking at the draft to bring in a running back for the reasons you just stated. Sean Tucker, I love that out of Syracuse, but I love him in the third round. Kenny McIntosh is there, of course, the tie-in with Todd Monken from Georgia. So I don't think it's a stretch to say the Ravens
good receiver too, and that's something they haven't had.
Correct. So I don't think that that's a stretch to see either one of those two players or someone else perhaps at running back. I'll be very surprised if the Ravens don't draft a running back this year.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm kind of on the same wavelength as you with that thinking. That's why I was just a little surprised. I didn't think Justice Hill would be back. I mean, I just didn't. But
well, he's a good pass blocker. You know, good on. I mean, he checks enough boxes. But like you, I think the cost was a little bit too much for what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's just and in a vacuum, it's not like it was this massive overpay, but they're just so limited in what they can do right now. So that's where you just have to look at the opportunity cost. I mean, you have very limited dollars. And look, the reality is, that it's not as though that money's bringing back Marcus Peters right there. But at the same time, you kind of look at it and say, okay, you got to be careful with those types of deals. I think at times the Ravens, I thought during the Joe Flacco era, there were times where they had too many guys that were making $2 or $3 million on their roster. And, when you're talking about being in that upper class, tax bracket, so to speak, for a quarterback like they are approaching, we assume now if they trade Lamar, then, or Lamar's not here, then yeah, they got plenty of cap flexibility. But you just don't know that right now. So that's where I was just a little surprised by it. But we also need to remember the Ravens are who they are from a philosophical standpoint.
Sure.
That they love special teams, they love depth. Justice Hill's a really good special teams player. And maybe the other factor that we should consider here, in fairness, is you do have a new offensive coordinator. Justice Hill, while he hasn't caught a ton of passes as a third down back, maybe that's something that they feel that Todd Monken can feature a little bit more. So we'll see how it plays out. But again, I don't want to spend too much time belaboring the point, but it's just one of those deals where it's just a little surprise. I did not, of the players that they were going to re-sign, I did not have Justice Hill as one of the more likely ones, given some of the factors that we just mentioned.
All right. I was just looking up Patrick Queen's Twitter account. Nestor and I, we review these players all the time. I think things have changed since 20, 30 years ago. Players now have a voice. They communicate differently, right? So Patrick Queen's posting pictures of himself fishing, catching bass, which is something I love to do in my spare time. But that's kind of been a little bit under the radar. I know he was going back and forth with a couple of fans in terms of they didn't know what they were talking about, what they were looking at, how to play football, et cetera, his position. But it's been very quiet with Patrick Queen and the Ravens, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been. And I mean, there are two ways of looking at that. One, I mean, he's under contract for one more year, even before you talk about his fifth year option. So from that standpoint, there's nothing really to talk about if we're just going to take it at face value. But I think from the moment that the Ravens struck the long-term deal with Roquan Smith at the end of last season, I think it was pretty evident. I mean, again, this conversation changes if Lamar Jackson is not here in 2023 and beyond.
Sure.
And, you're talking about drafting a quarterback, and, if Anthony Richardson's your quarterback or whatever you're doing, wait until next year to draft someone next year, whatever. Obviously, the economics change. But as it stands, if we're working under the assumption that it's Lamar Jackson, or even just from a roster building standpoint, Patrick Queen's not going to get Roquan Smith money, but, based on how he played in his third season and the very legitimate step forward that he took after being so up and down his first couple years, he's going to get a nice contract. There's no question about that. So that's where you look at it from a positional value standpoint. I mean, have the Ravens ever really paid two inside linebackers at the same time? Bart Scott got okay money you know, while he was playing next to Ray Lewis, but it got to the point where it was time for him to really get paid as a Pro Bowl caliber inside linebacker, he was off to the Jets, right? I mean, Ed Hartwell didn't get paid. You know, I mean, you kind of look at all these different times, you know, where someone was playing next to Ray Lewis. It's not as though they paid Ray Lewis and then they paid another guy. So I think you just look at it in terms of, can you really afford to pump that much into the inside linebacker position? I think the answer is no. So that's where you look at this thing. And I thought this right away from the time, really from the time that they acquired Roquan Smith, working under the assumption that they would try their hardest to work something out with him long-term. That to me felt like a time where, you know, Patrick Queen, does he get the Marquise Brown treatment in terms of, we know Marquise Brown requested a trade, and I'm not even saying Queen definitively wants out, but I think he sees what everyone else sees. His agent will see what everyone else sees. They're not going to pay two inside linebackers. Right. So do you wait this out and you keep maintain that position as one of your biggest strengths now, which if you do that, fine. But if you want to maximize the long-term value of an asset, then I think that's where you do look to potentially trade Patrick Queen this offseason, you know, understanding that he's got the fourth year, and then obviously a team could use the fifth year option, just like the Cardinals did with Marquise Brown. But unlike wide receiver, how much value are you getting for an inside linebacker? I mean, we just said he's, you know, he's becoming a much improved, better, good inside linebacker, but he's not Roquan Smith. So, and we saw what the Ravens had to give up for Roquan Smith. It's not as though it was a first round pick, even, right, you know, even for him, albeit that was a rental, but they're not getting a first round pick for Patrick Queen is my point. So what is, you know, what's the reality of his value? Can you potentially package him and, I don't know, a later draft pick to get a, I don't know if a day two pick. You know, that might be ambitious. Maybe it would be a swap of picks, or some swap of combination of picks. But yeah, I think that's an interesting name. Again, it's been quiet, but I don't think there's any, you know, again, there's no action to take. He's under contract, and even his fifth year option, you have until, I think it's May to apply that. I fully expect them to do that, but I do think, because of what we just said, going back to the Justice Hill part of this conversation, you have limited resources. You have five draft picks. You know, it's not a whole lot that they can do right now in terms of signing players without doing a bunch of restructuring, or, you know, making some trades to try to acquire some more picks, whether that's trading down or whether that's trading a player like a Patrick Queen. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. At the same time, if you trade him, you know, who else do you have at inside linebacker right now? I mean, I think at this point, Malik Harrison, he might be a better Sam backer than a guy that you're putting at inside linebacker who's, you know, only going to be a one or two down, you know, first down, second down player. So, you know, that maybe the answer is you do trade Patrick Queen and, you know, you take an inside linebacker, you know, day three, you know, something like that, and try to develop that guy. Maybe there's a, you know, a veteran LJ Fort-esque kind of player. I'm not saying LJ Fort specifically, but a guy like that, you know, that you bring in, you know, a Josh Bynes type that is younger than Josh Bynes, you know, a Josh Bynes type that's 5 years younger, that, you know, is kind of a fringe starting player, but a guy that, you know, a veteran player you could bring in and plug in next to Roquan. Because the reality is, when you look at how they want to play, I mean, you know, they're going to play, I mean, every team plays more nickel than base now, just about. And even the Ravens at times have played more dime than anything else, depending on what their personnel has been. So, you know, from that standpoint, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. So, again, I wouldn't read too much into it being quiet on that front, but it's, I think the best word for, you know, where the Ravens stand with Patrick Queen right now is just kind of, it's kind of awkward knowing that I'd be shocked if you're giving him a long-term contract. I don't even know what would have to happen for that to be on the table again, unless maybe you're having a rookie quarterback. But even then, you know, that's just not a position you want to pump that much money into, because, you know, it's an opportunity cost, right? You pay him, then you're not able to upgrade or pay someone else at another position. So ultimately, you know, I think Patrick Queen's time here is limited. It's short, but it doesn't mean it's guaranteed that he's going to be traded this, you know, this offseason, and we're not going to see him in 2023 in Baltimore.
All right, look, let's take a quick look at the secondary now with Geno Smith being released, and there, of course, there's a chance he's going to come back. I'm sure they would love to sign him, depending what happens with the market out there for him. But the Ravens did sign Trayvon Mullen. He had 2-year starter at Clemson, second round draft pick by the Raiders. Just your thought on Mullen and the Ravens secondary in general?
Yeah, I mean, Geno Stone is certainly someone they'd like to bring back. You know, I think the door is still open there. I think if you look at how the Ravens have typically proceeded with restricted free agents, and you know, this is kind of a unique year because think back to the COVID year 2020, so many players who may have only played a couple games that season, they got credit for, you know, a vested season because of the COVID rules being what they were and all the roster flexibility that was needed for obvious reasons. So you have more restricted free agents than you typically have seen here in recent years. But it wasn't surprising that Tyler Huntley was the only one to be tendered. In fact, I had heard even a couple days before the start of the new league year that it was possible Tyler Huntley wasn't even going to be tendered. And then there was a report that the Ravens were at least kicking the tires on some other veteran options out there that ultimately signed elsewhere. But I think you look at the state of their secondary right now. Obviously, you feel great about Marlon Humphrey. You have some young corners on the roster, whether you're talking about Brandon Stevens, you know, Jalen Armour Davis, Damarian Williams, the two that they drafted in the fourth round last year. You know, how comfortable are you with those guys? You know, are any of those guys ready to step into a starting role? You know, that's where it's kind of tough. Then you look at safety, which was this position that was just loaded from a depth standpoint. And now you look at it, Chuck Clark officially traded to the Jets, as expected, when no one was anticipating Chuck Clark being back. And with Geno Stone now being a free agent, if you don't bring him back, then okay. You feel good about your starters, right? You got Marcus Williams, you got Kyle Hamilton, but the Ravens have been a team that's liked to use some of those three safety looks over the last few years. We've seen them use that quite frequently. Or who's your nickel corner going to be if Kyle Hamilton's, you know, moving into more of a conventional safety role? So it is a little, you know, it's a little, I don't know if unsettling is the right word, but it's in flux right now as far as what they want to do there. I mean, it was interesting to see on Wednesday when all the reports earlier in the day were talking about the Eagles releasing Darius Slay, and then Marlon Humphrey tweets something. Slay gives you the, you know, you see players put this eyeball emoji out there all the time, which
all
just
the time. Yep.
has been so played out at this point because who the heck even knows what it means? But ultimately, ultimately Slay, it, you know, looks like compromise worked out that he's going to stay in Philadelphia, but you know, where are they with Marcus Peters? You know, is Marcus Peters someone that they, you know, I think they'd like to bring back if it's, sure, you know, a reasonable, you know, low risk kind of deal, understanding where he is now at this point. You know, he'll be another year removed from the knee injury, but he is on the wrong side of 30 and all that. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, definitely some depth concerns, some depth pieces that they need to add. You mentioned Trayvon Mullen. I mean, I'll be honest, Dennis. I mean, no, he's a former second round pick. And look, there have been guys that the Ravens have brought in that didn't really work elsewhere and they've turned into a nice contributor. But I'd be lying to you if I said I had high expectations for Mullen at this point. I mean, this guy's, you know, been with a couple teams, you know, was cast aside. I mean, he was waived in January. I mean, that's, right, you know, guys that kind of fit that description. I mean, you're talking about a fringe roster guy. So he'll have a chance to compete for a roster spot. You know, certainly, if you tell me right now, if you can look into a purple crystal ball and say Trayvon Mullen's on their 53-man roster, I'll say, okay, fine, good. That means he probably had a good spring and summer, but I could just as easily see him being cut at the end of the preseason and not being on this team. So they definitely have some work there. And you know, we've talked about the draft, and we'll continue to talk about the draft as we get closer and closer to late April. But that's why you look at that first round pick and, you know, wide receiver, corner, one of those two, right? I mean, it feels, you know, barring something unforeseen, feels like that's a good bet. I mean, even if the Ravens sign Marcus Peters, it could still be a corner they draft, sure, in the first round. I mean, that's just where they are right now at the position when you have Marlon Humphrey and a bunch of young guys that are kind of, you're kind of still figuring out where exactly they fall. Are they future starters? Are they sub package contributors, or are they more your backups, just, you know, to be plain and simple about it. So be interesting to see how they play out, but they're definitely in a position where how many years on paper, not talking about the years where the injuries have piled up, because we know that that's been a big theme for them too in the secondary, but it's been quite rare to talk about the Ravens secondary and see it look as light as it does right now on paper beyond those three starters I mentioned, Humphrey and your two starting safeties, Hamilton and Marcus Williams. After that, it's kind of like, okay, I think Brandon Stevens is at the very least a good depth piece, but beyond that, I mean, they didn't see enough from Damarian Williams or Jalen Armour Davis last year to pencil them in to say, oh yeah, they're going to play in the nickel. I mean, if they can win a job like that, then great, but they still have a lot to prove. And I'd also throw another name out there. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Ravens bring back Kyle Fuller at some point this offseason. I don't think that's going to be an imminent signing. I think that's going to be, you know, probably after the draft kind of a deal. And not going to be for much money considering he's coming off of an ACL. Sure. But one thing that was interesting about him, and we know he's a Baltimore kid, it was so unfortunate to see him get hurt. Didn't even get to play a regular season game in Baltimore as a Raven as he got hurt in week one. But he was actually someone that he was in the facility from time to time. Saw him even late in the season in Owings Mills at his locker, even though he's on IR. And typically veteran players who have a season ending injury, that oftentimes in season, they kind of go away. I mean, that's just, you know, it's not to say that they're not, you know, rehabbing hard, but typically it's tough for those veteran types to be around the team when they've suffered a season ending injury and they're just, you know, they're not part of it. I mean, they're just not. I mean, it's not as though their teammates don't like them or the coaches don't like them, but yeah, they kind of feel like they're an outcast at that point. Point in time. They're kind of on the outside looking in, but Kyle Fuller, it was interesting to see him being around the facility late last season. Was that a tell maybe that there could be some interest, some mutual interest in bringing him back? But even then, what's he going to look like physically? Again, he might fit more into that Trayvon Mullen territory where, you know, just talking about a guy that's going to try to make the team. So they definitely have some work to do on their secondary. There's no question about that. And your overall assessment on Geno Stone, I feel the same. I think you'd like to be able to keep him and bring him back, but just going to have to see what the money looks like and see, you know, what is he more interested in terms of going somewhere else and maybe having an easier path to a starting job, which, you know, you can understand from a former seventh round pick who hasn't made any money in the NFL yet.
Well, I think that if things stay static with our quarterback situation, then on day one of the NFL draft, either Todd Monken's going to be very happy or Mike McDonald, one or the other. We can debate all day long. Will they need a corner? Is a corner going to make more of a difference versus a wide receiver, given the fact that both are going to be rookies and you know, different stages of development? And also, how quickly can they make the leap from the collegiate level to the NFL?
Yeah, that's the big question, really, for any player at any position, right?
Sure.
But you know, certainly look at where the Ravens stand at wide receiver and at corner, you know, that first round pick. And again, they could trade back, you know, they could trade back to the end of the first round and try to pick up, a day two pick, you know, sure, something along those lines. So you don't really know, but certainly you look at those two positions, they've got to, you know, there's got to be a very legitimate addition made at both of those positions. You know, we can debate and talk about adding other depth pieces, which you'll need, but certainly you look at those positions right now more than any other positions, you know, even left guard. I mean, Ben Powers, you know, God bless him, got a great contract in Denver. Good for him. You know, the Ravens were never going to touch that. I mean, I figured he'd get somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 million average annual value and ended up exceeding that. So great for him. But, you know, you look at that and you say, all right, Ben Cleveland, you know, third year, former third round pick, it's time to go.
It's
you know,
time.
You need to. So I think even, you know, someone like him, it's, you know, you look at that position and I'm sure they'll draft him. I'm not sure. I'm pretty confident that they'll try to draft an offensive lineman at some point in April, but it's where you look at some of these guys, you know, that's where it's been frustrating. You know, even Ben Powers, it took him a couple years to figure it out. You'd like to be able to hit on some of these mid-round offensive linemen and, you know, have guys be a little, you know, a little more ready to play sooner than they have been, but it's tough. And we've talked about, you know, so much spread and so many of these offensive linemen, you know, they're playing in systems in college where they're not getting into a three-point stance and so much spread, and some of them aren't even run blocking that much because it's just, you know, it's all about go, 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 tempo. Yeah, and, space. You know, it's not really your traditional play in the trenches. So, you know, these are challenges that not just the Ravens, but any team faces in terms of finding quality offensive linemen. But yeah, you keep coming back to those two premium position needs that they have at wide receiver and corner, and we'll see how it plays out. That's not even to say they won't be able to make a veteran impact addition at some point, but again, where they stand right now with Lamar and this contract that, you know, you and I haven't gotten into it too much in this conversation, but it's the dark cloud that's just hanging over the entire organization right now, because you have to maintain as much flexibility as possible. You know, it's,
well, let me ask you a question, Luke. If the, let's say he does get traded, do the Ravens reclaim that $32 million in cap space?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I mean, that comes off the books. I mean, that would, whatever, you know, it's not as though it's a signing bonus where there would be like a prorated amount that would accelerate against the cap. So yeah, it would be, you know, it would be a very clean break from a salary cap standpoint in terms of, you know, if you traded Lamar Jackson, but then it's just a matter of, oh, now you need to replace him. No problem.
Now you're a quarterback.
Right?
You'll get draft picks. You'll get whatever. You'll get cap relief, yes. But you need a quarterback. And Baker Mayfield, of course, signed with the Buccaneers, right? Everybody's signed everywhere. So the well is starting to dry up, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's, that's where Nestor and I have just gone back and forth on this so much. And look, I mean, I'm not even going to say that I think the Ravens would entertain, you know, if the right team off, and this was more of a conversation piece before we knew which tag, but, you know, I think the Ravens absolutely would have entertained trade offers and probably still would, you know, if it's the right offer. It's why I think Indianapolis is interesting right now from the standpoint of, yes, it's only two first round picks, but in terms of value, the fourth overall pick, that has the value of, you know, and I saw someone on Twitter say this. I don't know. I don't have the exact, you know, the draft point, you know, pick chart that tells you how many points each. But you know what I'm talking about as a draft guy.
On a Jimmy Johnson trade, yeah, the chart value, high value pick.
The fourth overall pick would have the value of like the 19th and like the 20-something pick together. I mean, So really from that standpoint, if you're getting two first-round picks from Indianapolis, hypothetically, fourth overall, and then whatever it is next year, which you would assume with Lamar Jackson, at the very least, they're going to be pretty good. You know, so you're certainly not going to anticipate it to be another top 10 pick, but you know, that fourth overall pick, you can draft, you know, one of these quarterbacks if you love these guys. So you know, from that standpoint,
particularly if the Colts love one of these four guys, right, then they would be more apt to make the pick. And then you have the goof down in DC. Anything can happen with him. So again, it's not over until it's over.
Yeah, it's not over until it's over, although I would say with the Colts or with the Commanders, what they signed, Jacoby Brissett, you know, they have him, that, you know, they have the young guy.
Sam Howell's under contract with them,
yeah,
but still.
Right.
Yeah. And also this goof up there with from Green Bay, currently with Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, his dance with the Jets. If he all of a sudden turns double heel and double cross them and says, look, I want to stay in Green Bay. Now Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, they need a quarterback all of a sudden, and they're not gonna win without one. So all of a sudden desperation sets in. They have jobs to save, and Lamar Jackson's back on the play for the Jets.
Potentially. I'm glad you brought that up, because you will appreciate this analogy that I thought of, because I actually tuned into the Pat McAfee show and watched that whole thing.
I haven't seen
on
it
Wednesday.
Yet.
But you're a wrestling guy, so humor me for a moment. If you can think back to 2001 when Vince McMahon went on Monday Night Raw, he was famously buying WCW, right? And he was going through this long monologue about, you know, all the guys he was going to fire from WCW, and he put Eric Bischoff out of business and all these different things. And lo and behold, what happened? Shane McMahon showed up on the final episode of Nitro, and he bought WCW. Of course, it was all part of the storyline. But all I was thinking as Aaron Rodgers is going on this long monologue, and he's just, it's like, does this have a point? Get to the point, man. All I was thinking was, all of a sudden, you see a Zoom window pop up, and Joe Douglas is sitting there with Lamar Jackson, and he signed him to an offer sheet. And I was thinking, okay, I'm not going to put this out on Twitter because Ravens fans will think I'm just being a total heel here. I thought of how funny that would be, and I'm just like, oh man, I got to bring this up to Dennis
Yeah.
when we talk the following day. So, yeah,
It's
I
on the
mean,
table, Luke.
look,
Rightfully so. It's on the table, right?
everything I just it is. I will say this much though, you do have to look at it from a practical standpoint, from a cap standpoint. In the same way we're talking about how the Ravens haven't been able to do a whole lot right
Sure.
now. These teams have to have the cap space to sign Lamar to an offer sheet. And we know Lamar wants either a fully guaranteed deal or a long-term deal that has so much fully guaranteed money in it that it's, going to trump anything that's not a Deshaun Watson contract offer that we've seen over the last several years. So from that standpoint, that is where you probably can eliminate a lot of teams, in terms of what's their cap look like. What have they done in terms of quarterbacks? I mean, certainly now you look at Carolina, they're out of, they don't trade up to number one if they're suddenly trying to sign Lamar Jackson. Yeah, they obviously, they're drafting a quarterback. So, process of elimination, you're right. Could there be a weird scenario? Could a team redo an extraordinary number of deals and do full guarantees and use void years and all these different things to get Lamar Jackson? They could. But then what's that future going to look like with him?
Right.
Because if you've done all that stuff just to sign him, my goodness. I mean, we're already seeing, I mean, Cleveland's already, year two of Deshaun Watson's deal, they had, have already had to restructure, and you look at the future cap numbers. So that's where I do look at this thing. And if you're asking me to be realistic, understanding that, yeah, there could be that outlaw, wild card team that just completely goes against the grain. Looking at it pragmatically right now, that's where it does feel like Indianapolis is kind of the team that you point to because, they traded Stephon Gilmore, that cleared, think about 10 million in cap space. They released Matt Ryan, which was expected all along, but
Sure.
that cleared another 17 million in cap space. They are in a position where I don't know if they can structure the deal, where it has this crazy year one number that the Ravens would have a very difficult time matching. But they are in a position cap wise where if they want to fully guarantee a deal and do what Cleveland did, then yeah, they could do that. And then that puts Steve Bisciotti to a very interesting decision because, and I'm not talking about this solely from a narrative standpoint, but it is that team in Indianapolis.
Yes, it
It is
is.
an Ursay. And if Steve Bisciotti being a local guy, a guy who famously went to Baltimore Colts training camp and lived the pain of so many Baltimoreans who lost the Colts on that, March of 1984, and all of the scars that still exist to this day for that older generation. If it comes to it, and the Indianapolis Colts sign Lamar Jackson to a fully guaranteed offer sheet of 5 years, let's say, 5 or 6 years, somewhere in that neighborhood, which feels like that's the sweet spot that Lamar's been after, based on what we know, not knowing 100%, of course. But if you're Steve Bisciotti, are you really going to stand firm and say, nope, we're not doing a fully guaranteed deal. Nope, we're not doing that. And then Indianapolis steals a franchise quarterback from Baltimore. I mean, 40 years after stealing its team, that's tough. I mean, that's tough. But, as we're laying out all the scenarios of teams that could potentially do something like that, it's feeling more and more like Indianapolis is kind of the last team standing. Because the point is, even though you could say Atlanta or you could say Washington, everything they're doing from a roster building standpoint and the money that they've spent and the free agents that they've signed, it doesn't feel like they're ramping up to do something like that. It feels like, oh, we're going to go with our young guy, and we've signed a stopgap veteran to compete with that guy, and we'll try to, we'll see if our young guy develops, and if not, we'll take a swing next year. It just feels like Indianapolis is that one team that, if you're looking for a team to watch out for, it feels like that's the team to me that overwhelmingly looks like it, at least there's some pathway to it. All these other teams, I just look at it and say they're not proceeding in a way at all that makes me
Yeah.
feel like they're going to do that with Lamar. So, well, we'll see. And that's not to say, let's be clear, Chris Ballard might just be saying, you know what? We're going to take our lumps this year, and we'll either draft a quarterback there, or maybe we'll trade back and take some picks, and maybe we'll try to get our franchise guy next year. But but they're the team that has cap space, and at least over the first few days of free agency. Now, as you and I are talking, they might be ready to go sign, a bigger ticket number. But Bigger ticket item, but it seems, right now that they're kind of the last team that you look at and say, all right, there's at least a chance, they could be talking to Lamar Jackson. Cause I just look at all those other teams that were candidates, and, I've seen some talking heads on ESPN talk about the 49ers. They don't have a first round pick. So, and I know people have said, well, a team could wait until after the draft, and
no,
or I just don't think a team's doing that. Like, I think there's so much that would have to happen for that kind of a scenario. I just think that would be so weird for a team to, because you would have to sit out everything. You'd have to sit out all of free agency. So, if it's going to happen, I feel like it's Indy. I truly feel like it's Indy if it's going to happen at this point.
Do you think it's a possibility that this even happens of draft? Let's say Indy has identified, they love CJ Stroud, for instance, and Stroud's gone by the fourth pick. Do you think there's a possibility? But then again, same thing with the Ravens. If they love a quarterback and the quarterback they want is gone by the fourth pick, why would they consider making that deal?
Yeah, I mean, that's where it's tough. I mean, that's where it really is tough, and that's where I think you get into. We've kind of looked at this strictly from the financial standpoint, but that's when you do get into. We know the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Even Lamar's tweet earlier this week aside, for the most part, they haven't talked a lot about this publicly. There haven't been a ton of leaks. There have been some, but not a ton. That's where you do wonder, okay, where are they just in terms of footing as far as how they feel about each other at this point? And that's where you start to look into, is it a case where, I mean, Dennis, for all we know, keep in mind, the Ravens traded Marquise Brown on the first night of the draft last year. There had been some talk earlier in the offseason. Remember, he unfollowed the Ravens on social media, and there was a weird rumor out there that he was going to retire and become an e-gamer and all this different stuff. But the point was, he requested a trade from the Ravens early that offseason, and both sides kept it under wraps. I'm not at all reporting this. I'm not even saying that this is likely. I'm just saying, is there a possibility that Lamar Jackson has privately said, I'd kind of like to be traded. I'd kind of like to move on. Now, that doesn't mean the Ravens have to accommodate that, or even a case where they say, yes, we will, no questions asked. It could be, Lamar, we will take that into consideration if the right offer comes around. And is that a possibility? Sure. But like you said, that's why I've said all along, once it got to a point that they didn't get a deal done before the start of last season, and everything that's happened since then, throw in the injury stuff at the end of last year, this is just this is a very complicated situation. And it's complicated for any other team too. That they don't have the history with Lamar. So, but there's also, and that's not even to say that the Ravens and Lamar even fully trust each other right now. I'm sure trust would have to be a little bit of a concern at this point in time. Even if the negotiations have been in good faith or pseudo good faith, it's just tough when you've been at the table that long and you haven't been able to work out a deal. There's got to be some hurt feelings. There's got to be frustration. Mm-hmm. It's only human. So how does that factor into this entire pie, this entire discussion as far as what exactly is going to happen, and even talking about trades or even draft day trades? It's tough. That's why I keep looking at this thing. And I don't know, Dennis, if you ask me to handicap all of this in terms of what the most likely outcomes are, I'm feeling more and more like they could be right back at this position a year from now. And that's not even that either side wants that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you're the Ravens, and this is where I've pushed back, as far as people that have made assumptions that the Ravens are just going to trade him, you can't trade him for less than what he's worth. He is too... He's too important, too valuable an asset to just throw your hands up and say, well, we just need to move on. This isn't Hayden Hurst. This isn't right. Orlando Brown. This isn't Marquise Brown. This is a franchise quarterback that, say what you want about where he ranks in the hierarchy, but he's up there, and he's a former MVP and has done some incredible things on the football field. So even if you say, no, we don't want to give him a fully guaranteed contract, and we're frustrated, you still have to have the discipline to try to maximize your value for him. Even if you've said, we think the best play is to move on long term. Mm-hmm. if that deal's not sitting there right now, or if that team's not coming to that other team's not coming to make an offer sheet that Lamar wants, and it's clear we know Lamar wants something that's not conventional, that's where you look at this thing and say they might just have to wait this out. And look, that's not a great dynamic, because we're looking right now, and even to this early stage in free agency, well, the Ravens have traded away Chuck Clark. They've released Calais Campbell. They've lost Ben Powers and Josh Oliver, and those are expected. I'm not saying that those are, you know, those last couple were major losses necessarily. Well,
how about the backup quarterback? They've offered, right? They've tendered Tyler Huntley, right, with a second round type of a deal.
Yeah, well, actually, it wasn't even the second round tender. It was the low tender.
It was a low tender.
So,
okay.
Yeah,
so right now,
it was
both
the low
of the quarterbacks are out there.
Theoretically, both of their quarterbacks could be signed to offer sheets. Now, of course, Lamar would have the two first round picks attached to him. Tyler Huntley, it's strictly a right of first refusal. You have a chance to match that deal. So,
And there are teams that can use Tyler Huntley, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be a matter
for him.
Right. It's just a matter of when you look at those restricted tenders, and this is why I think the Ravens ultimately decided on the non-exclusive for Lamar, because it essentially acts in the same way. It's just, you know, two first-round picks attached to it. So many teams are leery of doing the offer sheets, though, because unless it's really a very impressive mega kind of offer, they get matched a lot of times. And so many executives say, there's an opportunity cost to even trying to do this, because if I sign them to an offer sheet, that counts against my salary cap for up to 5 days.
Right.
And if that other team matches, guess what I just did? I did Eric DaCosta's work for him.
Right.
So, or I did, you know, I did Les Snead's work for him, you know, whatever GM you want to throw out there. So, you know, that's where you tend to not see too much movement of restricted free agents. But I would also say the fact that the Ravens only put the low tender on Huntley and didn't even do the second round, that also shows you that he could be their backup quarterback this year, but that also tells me that it could end up being a placeholder depending on how this all shakes out. So we'll see. I mean, there are so many moving parts to this.
Interesting stuff, for sure.
It really is. And there's a lot of nuance to it, and that's why I've been frustrated just seeing – you know, you see some of the talking heads on the national shows, and they're just like, well, this team should go after Lamar Jackson. It's like, they don't have a first-round pick. Or, well, this team should go after Lamar Jackson. It's like, they had to make moves just to get under the salary cap, let alone they're going to sign an offer sheet that the Ravens aren't going to match. Or they're going to sign an offer sheet that Lamar Jackson's going to say, yeah, I'll sign up for that. It's just, there's a lot more to this. And, oh, yeah, as we'll mention again, he doesn't have an agent, and that makes negotiating complicated. So there are just so many factors at work here. And to be clear, that doesn't mean that I'm suggesting Lamar Jackson isn't worth it even at the end of the day.
Sure.
But there's a lot more to it than just playing fantasy football and sitting there and saying, oh, yeah, he would be great with the San Francisco 49ers. Well, guess what? The 49ers probably agree with you, but they say, how in the world are we going to do that when you know, we don't have a pick and you know we've got all these other things that we have to do? So. You know, I'm not saying there couldn't be that mystery team at some point, but I think you look at it practically speaking in terms of draft capital and in terms of where that team stands with the salary cap. And that's where I keep coming back to. It feels like Indy is really the only team left standing that makes a whole lot of sense, barring some really strange scenario, which, you know, hey, this whole thing has been strange, so let's not rule out a strange scenario, but I'm not going to sit here and try to imagine what that could be.
Yeah, well, a couple of things there. Jimmy Ursay has to escrow an awful lot of money, and I do think he's part of the NFL old guard. I don't know. I know it's there, but it's hard for me to imagine that that's going to happen. And like you, I think we're going to be in the same position a year from now. Clearly, the Ravens have to address the backup quarterback situation in order to have a better chance in the playoffs, should Lamar Jackson get hurt once again, which is something they have to guard against.
Yeah, the problem with that is, you know, you kind of look at this roster and say, okay, you're going to keep Lamar. You still want to make some upgrades to your roster, right? They were good last year. They weren't the best.
Here comes Stetson Bennett.
I mean, we'll see. So,
but we saw important draft picks were a year ago, and we were reminded once again when Brock Purdy was Mr. Relevant, and ends up playing very well in a starting position for the San Francisco 49ers. And this is where your scouting department comes in and everything else. But Luke, as always, I appreciate your time. Please tell our listeners where they can find you on social media, BaltimorePositive.com, and all the great stuff that you do on the web, as well as your blog.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke, as I am monitoring free agency. We are now into the start of the new league year. Not a whole lot going on for the Ravens to this point, but certainly more to come. There will be some signings. There could be some other, players that leave, certainly free agents who are free to sign with anyone at this point. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. The latest on the Ravens, 12 Ravens thoughts, reaction to their various moves, players who've left, all of that at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you've gotten updates such as the Ravens parting ways with Calais Campbell or re-signing Justice Hill. We'll see if there is any Lamar Jackson-related news in the coming days. But the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore, any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device. And, of course, you want to be on AM – or, of course, anything on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Ravens press conferences coming up. Usually there are at least a few between now and draft time. You can check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, Luke, as always, I appreciate you. No lack of content, lots of moving parts still. Deals are still being made out there as we head towards the NFL draft.
Absolutely, and Lamar Jackson watch continues, and we'll see if there are any new developments when you and I reconvene next week.
Can't wait for that, Luke. Stay well, my friend.
Thanks, Dennis. Be well.
My pleasure. There he goes, Luke Jones here, 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.